This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton, and we call our show Main Street because these microphones are our Main Street, our virtual one across the state this time of day. We've got the real ones that people are crossing and maybe looking up at a marquee right now thinking, am I going to go to the movies tonight or this weekend? Because it is the summer blockbuster season, and we're going to talk about that today with three movie aficionados who really know their stuff. Matt O'Lean, he's a regular here on Main Street and Prairie Public, and Tony Tilton and Brittany Goodman, who often go to the movies with Matt, and they are ready to talk about a very busy summer at the screen. And that actually started before this weekend, Matt. We had Guardians of the Galaxy.
It starts earlier and earlier every year. May 5th was really the kickoff with Guardians of the Galaxy 2. Tony and I have seen it. I didn't like it as well as the first one, but it made $145 million. So what's the secret to this? Should we call it a franchise yet, Tony?
Yeah, it's a franchise. The third one's already in the planning stages, and they already... Guardians of the Galaxy will meet up with the Avengers in the next Marvel Avengers film. So I liked it just for the fact that it was kind of like going back to an old friend's place and just hanging out.
are comfortable
there
characters.
There wasn't a lot of plot there, but it was fun interaction.
Yeah, they're fun characters. They really are.
Right.
I did think there was a sag in the middle when the characters get separated because really the first film's a recruiting film.
Right.
And the second film, you got to find something for them to do.
Right.
And I thought there was a little bit of a sag in the middle. I did, however, enjoy the scene with Kurt Russell and Chris Pratt discussing the genius of brandy by Looking Glass.
That's right.
The soundtrack is good.
Yes,
I saw. Brandy, ELO,
yep.
George Harrison,
exactly.
A lot of stuff.
Yeah, there's some great
stuff. It's
great
a big
scenes.
Film. It's the first big hit of the summer.
And a couple other movies came out, Snatch and King Arthur, not doing too well.
King Arthur is a bad film. It's probably a bad marriage of director and source material because Guy Ritchie puts his Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, bare-knuckle brawling, martial arts, slow motion to the King Arthur legend, and it's really a misguided film. And Snatched is underperforming as well. I think they thought Amy Schumer, Goldie Hawn, that'll be comedy gold. I've not seen it. I don't think any of us have, but the reviews have been pretty rough.
Yeah, they have, actually. Brittany, how about The Lovers with Deborah Winger?
The Lovers... The thing I'm most excited about is that Deborah Winger is in it. We haven't seen her in a while. She co-stars with Tracy Letts, who is usually more of a writer. And he wrote August Osage County and the hit Broadway show Killer Joe. And it's one of those, they're married. They both know that each other is cheating on each other with somebody else. And then something happens and it gets kind of complicated. It looks good. I'm going to definitely go see The Lovers.
Oh, very good actors.
And that one's kind of in limited release, I think. Every summer there's always these little gems you have to find. Remember the end of the tour 2 summers ago, Brittany? We loved that film, but nobody really saw it.
Which is too bad.
Yes, it is.
Well, I remember a long time ago that I saw a movie called Alien.
Oh, yeah.
And I have never forgotten it.
That was at the Lark Theater downtown Fargo.
And Alien Covenant opens this weekend.
Well, Alien Covenant is a sequel to Prometheus, which came out a couple years ago, which was a prequel of sorts to Alien. And this is more of a direct prequel leading up to the events of Alien.
This is like Star Wars. You have
prequels
and sequels.
So you've got to figure out what's going on. Yeah, this one takes place 10 years after Prometheus, and it's basically 20 years before the original Alien film. So they're kind of explaining how the alien species comes to be. And Michael Fassbender's back playing two roles this time. Both androids, but different androids.
And no Sigourney Weaver.
No Sigourney Weaver. No.
Catherine Waterston is now the star.
Right.
She's up and coming. She's right. I think she's hit it big probably at this point.
Very much so. I mean, this is a scary, adrenaline-filled thing. And a friend of mine who just saw it last night said it was a good flick.
Always worked for me.
Yeah.
Tony, Prometheus was a film that was sort of disagreed upon by a lot of people. Where do you fall down on Prometheus?
I liked it as a film, but I didn't like it as a prequel to Alien because it changes what the original Alien films were about, where they're changing the whole setup of the film, and that's what a lot of people had an issue with. But I guess this is Ridley Scott's baby, so we're just going with it.
Well, let's go for a Neil Del Toro story that has become a movie, Wakefield, Brittany.
This is Bryan Cranston, who's pretty big, and Jennifer Garner. And he decides to check out of his life and live in the kind of apartment above his garage and watch his family. And I watched the preview to it yesterday, and it says that the tagline is, "I never left my family, I left myself." I had one friend that kind of questioned the age difference, but there's not as big an age difference between those two as you might think. I thought they look pretty good together. I'm interested in seeing it.
That's a quirky story.
The early reviews are pretty good, too. Mm-hmm. I know our friend Roger Moore saw it and liked it, so maybe it can find an audience. We'll see.
Well, let's move on to the next weekend because we got a big one coming up then. That is Baywatch.
You know, they're doing a brilliant thing with this movie. They've turned it into a comedy, direct out-and-out comedy.
Just let's be clear here. This is a TV show that's going to the big screen.
Well, this was the biggest show around. This had 1 billion people watching it worldwide. So it's definitely got a built-in audience, which is what they look for. You got beautiful people of both sexes in it, you know, between The Rock and
running down the beach.
Running down the beach in the red swimsuits. Really, I mean, what other thing are you expecting when you go to Baywatch?
Well, and it's got a good comedic director.
It does.
He, Seth Gordon, he does TV's The Goldbergs, Horrible Bosses.
Yeah, I think that's going to be the eye candy, and you're gonna have a fun time.
Actually, Dwayne Johnson's not bad.
He's one of the biggest stars in the world, whether people like it or not. And Tony, where do you think this opens? What do you think a box office take would be? What would they be satisfied with? Is this something that could hit 60, 70 million?
Oh, I think it's going to break 100.
You do?
Yep.
See, that's what I was wondering if it could break 100.
I think it'll break 100.
Okay.
Let's go to the next day. Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Tales.
Well, this is number five. I've tired of this series a while ago. You know, the first film, everybody was enamored with what Johnny Depp did with the character. There are new actors in this one. Javier Bardem, looking very much like Anthony Quinn in the previews. He's the pirate captain that's out to get Captain Jack, so he's in it. Jeffrey Rush is back. There's some cameos from people that were in the previous films. I just wonder. You know, I think this series peaked with about the third one, and I would not be surprised if this underperforms at the box office. There might be some a hangover. You know, just people might be tired of this. What's your thoughts?
I think,
Tony?
The same thing. It's one of those where I've seen the ads and I thought, maybe, but it's one of, if I have time, if I'm not.
That's how I feel about it too. Hey Matt, did you realize that there's a really special cameo in this one?
Yes.
Well,
should we say?
Let's say it.
Paul McCartney is in this.
Really?
Oh, that's right.
Yes.
Wow.
And, of course, Keith Richards was in a previous one. So they're just bringing the old rockers in. And, yes, so I will be excited to see what Paul does. Usually he just plays Paul in Hard Day's Night and Help and whatever. But hopefully they'll have something for him to do. I don't know. Keith Richards played Captain Jack's father, right? So maybe this is
Uncle Jack. Uncle Jack. Okay. Is what Paul McCartney will be.
Well, so it's kind of like the Stones and the Beatles are his father and uncle. Okay, got it.
Well, the notes I found on this.
Couldn't they got Ringo in this too? That would have been great.
There are Norwegian directors behind this film.
Yep.
Joachim Rønning and Espen Sandberg.
Well, and they claim they're going back to the original film for some of it, you know, because I think they realize how over heavy they got with this. So. Mm-hmm. We'll see what happens.
Yep. Okay. Let's talk about The War Machine, which also opens May 26th.
That one is based upon a nonfiction book by Michael Hastings called The Operators, and it's based upon a real general, Stanley McChrystal, and it's got Brad Pitt.
Yeah, playing McChrystal, huh?
Yep. And it's directed by the director of Animal Kingdom. So, yeah. So it's got some directing chops here. You know, I don't know too much else about it.
He's making a lot of war films. Have you noticed that lately with Pitt? This is like three straight.
I think this is a satire, though.
This has some strange Lovian tendencies, is the way I've heard it described.
Right. But he has made a lot of World War II films. So, I think four now in the last couple of years, actually. So, well, if you count Inglourious Basterds, it's four.
Right.
That was in 2009. But we'll see if Brad Pitt's superstardom has been dinged by the divorce. I'm not sure if that plays into it, but we'll see. If the film's good, people will go to it.
I think the biggest issue it's going to have is it's against two other huge movies.
I agree. I think Tony makes a great point. I think that Pirates and Baywatch might sink it a little bit that weekend.
I've been intrigued by Brad Pitt playing these mature, older roles.
Well, people forget that Brad Pitt and Tom Cruise and these guys are all 55,
yeah, exactly.
58 years old
but
in
they've
Clooney's
been,
case.
They've been these kids for, right. for decades.
Yeah, they're about they're me and Tony's age, their, both Pitt and –
finally playing their age a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're aging okay too, yeah, I think, and, you know, it, in my opinion.
I think Pitt is actually a pretty decent actor. I thought he was very good in Moneyball. I thought he was very good in Benjamin Button. So he is – I don't think he's just a pretty boy. I think he's just like Clooney. Clooney's a good actor too. So, but yeah, these guys are all in their early 50s now, so – which makes me and Tony feel old because we're about the same age as Brad Pitt.
We can only say we're younger than all these guys.
Though. Imagine how I feel. Okay. Let's go to a brand new franchise. It opens the June summer blockbuster series, and that is Wonder Woman.
This will be the first time this character's ever been on the big screen in her own film. She appeared in Batman vs. Superman two years ago. And
again, it was a TV show.
A big TV show. And this is getting fantastic reviews from the advance. People have seen this.
The woman who plays Wonder Woman is getting great reviews.
Yeah, Gal Gadot. And she's Israeli actress. She's been in Fast and Furious franchise before this and a lot of other things. But she does a great job in this. And they set it in World War I. They changed it up a bit instead of World War II. Chris Pine plays her love interest, Steve Trevor, in the show.
I like the period. The period looks good in the trailer when they go back to World War I.
Well, and they do a good job of setting up her origin and why she does what she does and becomes a superhero and all this. So if you know the comic, she's an Amazonian princess.
With an invisible plane.
Right. And she's they're on an island of only women. No men are allowed. And they're all super women, basically, and they're trained for war. But they help out civilization when it needs it. So civilization comes to them with World War I, apparently, and she helps out Steve Trevor and rescues him, goes back to help the war effort at that point.
Now, I used to read these comics. Isn't she good with a rope? Or
she's got a magic lasso that makes you tell the truth when she puts it around you.
Oh, my heavens. I'll be looking forward to that.
Tony, is this DC's rescue from the doldrums? Because Marvel has just been kicking their butt.
People
the
keep
last
forgetting
10
that
years.
DC had just started. Marvel's been going for a long time, and they did a nice slow build-up. DC tried to cram it all into one or two films with Man of Steel and Batman vs. Superman. They should have spread that out over a few. Wonder Woman takes its time finally, and will introduce you to this character a little better to get you ready for these next films with Justice League coming up later this year. So I think it will. The advanced previews have been great. And reviews have been great on it, so I think this will definitely kick it up.
I just wonder if it won't do box office like Marvel does.
I think it'll do pretty well. I think it'll do at least on the middle level Marvel films. Between Doctor
Strange, like an Ant-Man type thing.
I think it'll do better than that.
Okay. A lot of women really identify with Wonder Woman. Yeah. There's T-shirts
all
over the place.
She is a huge icon.
They might have the demographics covered on this one too.
Well, actually, of all of these superhero movies, that's the one that's most intriguing to me.
Oh, I can't wait to see it. And Gal Gadot is going to be a star. If she's not already there, I think she's going to be a big star. Yeah.
That's Matt Olien. We've got Tony Tilton and Brittany Goodman. We're talking about the summer blockbuster movies schedule, and we'll be back with more after this.
Support is provided by Stinson Leonard Street. With more than 450 attorneys providing transactional and litigation legal services from 13 offices across the country. Online at Stinson.com.
It's a night of music on Prairie Public. Following the rebroadcast of Main Street, we kick it off with Friday Night Swing with Lloyd Anderson. Then at 9 Central, it's the Jazz Junket with Ryan Schweitzer. And at 10, Dream Farm Radio with Julie Lavender, followed by Dimensions in Jazz with Bob Schieffer. That's all right here, statewide, on Prairie Public.
You're listening to Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton, and I'm with Matt Olien, Tony Tilton, and Brittany Goodman because we're talking about the movies. The big screen is going to be busy this summer. We started June with Wonder Woman. Now we're going to another, I guess, big franchise that goes way back, The Mummy, Tony.
The Mummy. This is Universal Studios is rebooting their monster franchises. They've kind of tried earlier with the Dracula Untold, which is not very good, and they kind of push that off the side. The Mummy's really the setup where they're creating their own universe with the monster films, which they actually had back in the 30s and 40s. If you remember, all those films were connected. They were the first real universe films where all the characters interacted.
Yeah,
they had
that's
the monster
right.
team ups with House of Frankenstein and
pre-Marvel.
Frankenstein meets the Wolfman.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, Universal, after Marvel had all this success, said, hey, we've got this library of monsters. Let's do this. So, The Mummy is a new reboot. This is not the Brendan Fraser Raiders of the Lost Ark inspired mummy. Tom Cruise is in this, and it's a modern day mummy. One of the interesting characters is Russell Crowe, who stars in this as well. And he plays Dr. Henry Jekyll before Hyde. But he won't be showing up as Hyde, but that's coming up in the future, apparently.
Now, this is not a comedic approach?
No,
this is
a serious horror. This is, as Russell Crowe said, this is designed to scare the blank out of you.
Well.
So this might be very interesting, an action thriller that has horror elements to it.
What is your sense of the box office on this, Tony? I could go either way. This could either be big or it could be a bomb.
It really
depends. I
really
can't get my finger on it.
You know, the advertising so far has been okay, but I think they're going to really have to push to get people out there for this.
I do too.
And I think it still could do well. You got to remember with these films, it's international box office.
Yep.
It's not necessarily U.S. It might do under 100 million U.S., but it'll probably do half a billion worldwide.
They love Tom Cruise in China.
Exactly.
We know that.
Exactly. He's the number one star in the world for a reason.
So. Brittany, also on that June 9th, It Comes at Night opens.
Well, and that's another horror film, maybe a little bit more my style, but I'll go see The Mummy. It's got Joel Edgerton, who's pretty hot these days, and it's a kind of a survivalist cabin in the woods, psychological horror. And the director got a ton of awards for his 2015 film, Krisha. So I think it's going to be very good.
All right. And My Cousin Rachel, Matt.
I'm kind of looking forward to this, see what they do with this Daphne du Maurier novel. It was originally filmed in 1952 with Richard Burton and Olivia de Havilland. And that was the film that really got Richard Burton noticed on his long career. Rachel Weisz is in this. I like Rachel Weisz. She's always interesting. She's always good to watch. So this might be one of those art house films, Fargo Theater, that Brittany and I will go check out at some point.
I also think there's an up-and-coming actor playing the Richard Burton part as Sam Claflin.
Sam Claflin, yeah.
He's been in a lot of things lately, and recently Their Finest. So very nice-looking young man.
Well, let's move on to June 16th when Cars 3 opens.
I didn't like the first one. If you go back, I remember it was a two-hour animated film, and I thought, this is too long. I didn't like Cars 2. This is the one Pixar franchise that just hasn't clicked with critics. They haven't got an Oscar for it. And I'm baffled why they keep going back to this.
Isn't it a young demo?
It's a kid movie that sells a ton of toys.
Yeah.
It's what Pixar cashes a check every once in a while to keep making other films.
And it seems to work.
That's exactly what it is.
Okay. I'm not looking forward to this one. No. I think neither Nick is too old for it. And Chloe doesn't like cars, so I think I might be able to escape the theater on this one.
Okay, but June 23rd, everybody's going to Transformers. I suppose, right? The last
I'm not,
night.
But Tony
well,
can comment.
It's the new. It's kind of a newer. It's you know they did the Transformers 2 years ago with Mark Wahlberg. That was kind of a reboot of the franchise. It still has people. You know, Josh Duhamel is in this film as well, but Anthony Hopkins is in this.
Yeah, that's a big one.
And so they're trying to bring up the level of stuff in these movies, and this harkens back to the Crusades in the Middle Ages where there were supposedly some Transformers here at that time, and you know, it's a Transformers flick.
Well, I mean, Michael Bay throws as much chrome as he can at the screen.
Exactly.
I
mean, it's one of those where
it'll make money.
It's literally a Transformers flick, so you're going to go to it or you're not, and that's based on that.
Well, let's talk about our interesting remake, The Beguiled.
I'm excited about it. Matt and I were just talking about, you know, the last couple of Sofia Coppola's movies we haven't been that thrilled with.
I didn't like The Bling Ring at all.
Yeah, I didn't either. And what was that other one that she did?
Somewhere.
It was boring.
Yep.
But she's got a great cast. Kristen Dunst, Nicole Kidman, Elle Fanning, and Colin Farrell. And it sounds kind of steamy. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you saw the 1971 version with Clint Eastwood and Geraldine Page.
It's set during the Civil War.
Yep.
Yes, it is.
Colin Farrell is a wounded Union soldier, and he's taken into this all-girls school. What could happen there?
That's beguiling, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Let's move to the next week, June 28th. Baby Driver, Brittany.
Well, this one, I understand the soundtrack's supposed to be really good, and it's got Ansel Elgort, Lily James, Kevin Spacey, and John Hamm, and it won an audience award at Sundance and also did really well at South by Southwest. And Elgort plays a young getaway driver coerced into working for a crime boss. And the director did Shaun of the Dead, right. Hot Fuzz, and Scott Pilgrim vs.
Edgar
the
Wright.
World.
Yeah, fantastic director.
How about Score, Tony?
Score is a documentary about music film composers. And some of the top composers working currently, including, of course, John Williams and Hans Zimmer, Danny Elfman, Quincy Jones, and Rachel Portman are featured in this documentary. So it's for those who are lovers of music and film music, this will be a treat because you don't often see much about them. About film scoring people. The only one previously I remember is my favorite, John Barry, was featured in Moviola, which was made for PBS special Great Performances thing where they kind of went behind the scenes.
Well, Matt Olean and Scott Prebus, who does Prebus on Classics, Prebus on Jazz here for Prairie Public's radio network, actually spent Monday talking about film scores, and it's a very interesting topic. As a matter of fact, I'm using it on the weekend show, Sunday morning at 10 Central, folks out there. Yeah. It's very interesting discussion.
It's very important to movies. The score can really set the tone for a film, something like Big Country. I mean, that tells you about, see a big film about the land.
Film scores are really known as the soul of the cinema. They're the soul of the movie.
So much of the music we hear these days is actually in a film originally.
Right.
Yeah. Okja, Matt, you mentioned this to me because this is has a piece of controversy tied
this
to
This is
it.
The director who did Snowpiercer, and Tilda Swinton is in it, and it's currently at Cannes. And the reaction at Cannes was very mixed, to say the least. There was some booing, and this is really an interesting topic because Okja is a Netflix release. And I think the people at Cannes struggled with whether they were going to screen it or not. The traditionalists like me, I like it in the theater. It would not be Oscar eligible if it's on Netflix. And so it's it could be an interesting film, but I think the backlash over in France, Doug, was really toward the platform that they were using. And Brittany, Tony, where do you see this going in the next couple of years? Or does anybody know how important Netflix is going to be for film release?
I'm not sure, but one thing I will say is they could decide to also release it in theaters, and then it would be eligible, right?
And a lot of films are doing that.
And Netflix can afford to.
Right. They're starting to do that, or they'll do a 30-day window. A lot of it it's the business side of it is what it is. And what they determined is that they can make more money on Netflix with video on demand, with people directly downloading the film or paying for it that way. Than putting it in a theater and risking it up against all these blockbusters where it might not do anything. So a lot of times they'll release a film in the theater only to make it Academy eligible or to dissuade some of that criticism. But the problem is that this is the way the film business is going.
That's a reminder. It's a very big business. And let's end June with another sequel, Despicable Me 3.
I do like this series better than Cars because Steve Carell is so funny. But again, I might not be able to escape this one. I think Chloe will want to see this one, and maybe even Nick. So, we'll see. We'll see.
Well, I like the Minions. They're lots of fun. And, of course, they're everywhere.
I'm tiring of the whole thing, but I guess I'll be there.
Well, and the 30th, remember, we have a film coming out, too, that we saw at the Fargo Film Festival.
The Hero.
The Hero. That's a big one. For us.
With Sam Elliott, Jeff Schlossman, and Eric Ramismo from Fargo are two of the producers. Of course, they were on our stage at the film festival. And this is a very nice film. I urge people, if you missed it at the Fargo, this is Sam Elliott's kind of career performance, I would say. Mm-hmm. Catherine Ross is in it. A very good cast is in this film. And Nick Offerman. So please go see this film and support two Fargo producers. And you know, if it finds an audience, you never know. Sam Elliott was, you know, they chatted about Oscar nomination for him at the festival. I think that's a long shot, but we will see, and hopefully it finds an audience.
Okay, that's Matt Olean, Tony Tilton, and Brittany Goodman are with us to talk about summer movies, and we'll be back with July after the news with Danielle.
For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster. Senator Heidi Heitkamp says one thing she hears about from businesses, farmers, and others in North Dakota is the amount of unreasonable regulations coming from the federal government. Heitkamp says people find it frustrating.
They understand we need clean water and clean air. They understand that things are better since we passed the Clean Air Act and the Clean Water Act. What they don't understand is a regulation like Waters of the United States that really asserts jurisdiction over every puddle or pond on their farm.
Heitkamp says that's why she and Republican Senator Rob Portman of Ohio have introduced the Regulatory Accountability Act. She says it would lead to a better analysis of regulations going forward. One provision would be an advance notice of rulemaking,
which would require that if you're going to do a major rule, everybody needs to come in and you need to actually have a discussion before you put pen to paper.
Heitkamp also says she likes another provision that would require every major regulation to have a look back.
What do I mean by that? From the time that it's enacted, no later than 10 years, they have to tell you how they're going to review that regulation and review whether it's effective, whether the analysis that they did on the front end was actually achieved.
And Heitkamp says regulations would require a cost-benefit analysis. She says it is out of committee, but there is still a way to go before it gets to a Senate vote. About 100 state employees have applied for voluntary buyouts to help with the state's tight budgets. It's one of the tools state agencies can use to help reduce state employee numbers. The deadline for application is Monday. Nick Archuleta is the president of North Dakota United, the union representing state workers.
I took a phone call from a gentleman who was a public employee. He had applied for the early buyout, not so much because he was ready to leave, but there was a co-worker of his that would have been the next on the chopping block. And this co-worker has this young family. The guy's just getting his career started. And this gentleman, who's a little more seasoned, took it upon himself to look out for his co-worker before he looked out for himself. It's really kind of an inspiring story.
Archuleta says it'll be a while before he knows how many of those 100 or so state employees who applied for buyouts will get them.
Because remember, agency heads have the final discretion on whether or not they'll grant those retirements.
A number of positions are being left unfilled in state government, but Archuleta said there will be layoffs as well. And the North Dakota Department of Health is holding public education sessions about HIV and STD prevention over the next couple of weeks. Lindsay Vanderbush is HIV program manager. She says the sessions will provide information about prevention, transmission, and treatment and are part of a collaboration between the health department and family health care. She says there have been increases in HIV in North Dakota.
Primarily in men who have sex with other men who are utilizing app technology to meet anonymous sex partners. So we wanted to be able to provide the public, or if anybody feels that they are at risk, more information on how they could either get tested, how they can do things in their own life, such as getting access to HIV PrEP, which is a daily medication that people can take to prevent HIV infection, even if you are exposed, and just learn about some resources, and again, the local epidemiology, so people can make good decisions about their own health.
The first of the education sessions will take place in Minot tonight. More are planned for Bismarck, Dickinson, Williston, Grand Forks, and Fargo. Vanderbush says despite public education efforts about HIV, there are still a lot of misconceptions that people carry about the virus. For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton with Brittany Goodman, Tony Tilton, and Matt O'Lane. We're going to the movies because summer's a big season for the films, and Spider-Man Homecoming is a big opening movie in July, Tony.
Well, for those of you who saw Spider-Man, this is a different Spider-Man than what you've seen in the movies, except for the last Marvel Avengers film.
No Tobey Maguire, no Andrew Garfield.
Nope, this is Tom, this is Tom Holland, who did the role. It wasn't a cameo, it was an extended part, but in Civil War. And Spider-Man, business-wise, was turned over from Sony into the Marvel Universe. They made an agreement so that they could co-produce this. And all the fans are very happy now because it could be a little more true to the character. And it's definitely done that already. So there's a lot of anticipation for this film. Robert Downey Jr. co-stars in this film as Iron Man, as Tony Stark, because he has a major role in this. So people are looking forward to this one. This will be one of the biggest hits of the summer.
I like the way you kind of keep things connected, too. That's fun.
I do think this will be a big one, Tony. I agree with you, and I think it was time to move on from Garfield.
Yep.
A ghost story, Brittany.
Well, it's a lot what it sounds like. Casey Affleck comes back to haunt Rooney Mara. And I just want to note that David Lowery, he's done Pete's Dragon, Eight Them Body Saints, and he started out with a short film called Pioneer, which debuted at the Fargo Film Festival.
All right. Let's move on to July 14th, Tony. Another one. War for the Planet of the Apes.
Well, this is the continuation of the reboot of those. And they do tie into the original Planet of the Apes. Forget the Tim Burton one. That was not part of it. But these these have been very critically lauded films. They've been very good. And again, this is Andy Serkis is playing his same role, Caesar, through the all three films. All with CGI, but you can't tell. It's so incredibly well done. This is all the – everything's being ramped up from where it was before. Now they're at war with each other.
And Woody Harrelson's in
Woody
this
Harrelson
one?
Plays a kind of psychotic general who's – you know, colonel who's fighting for the survival of the human race, whereas the apes are coming up too. So
Lady Macbeth also opens July 14th. I know nothing about this version, Brittany.
Well, it's not Shakespeare. Uh-huh. It is an adaptation from a Russian novel. And it's nothing to do with Shakespeare except for perhaps the reference. And it looks like Florence Pugh is getting a lot of critical mm-hmm. attention as the lead character. She is plays a wife that comes back to a manor and ends up taking a lover. And that is not real popular. Kind of a sex and violence, power and control tale.
Okay, but I'm told by the New York Times that together they soon clarify the title's reference to the Scottish play.
Oh, good.
So, interesting. July 21st, Dunkirk, Matt.
This has been one of the most hyped films for – it was supposed to be released late last year. Then they pushed it back to the summer. I've seen multiple trailers to this for going on – 6-7 months now. So this is Christopher Nolan's big, I think, shot at Oscar, if it comes off. The cinematography in the film is said to be breathtaking with the cameras they use, with the beach. This is still a story Americans are not very familiar with, though. This is a big deal in 1940. It's a big, quote-unquote, victory for the British because they were able to get all these troops off the beaches in France and get them home. And it looks fantastic. Kenneth Branagh, Mark Rylance. You know, we just don't know until we see it. Hans Zimmer is the composer on this.
I can almost hear the music because it's Dunkirk, after all.
I've not been wild about Nolan's last couple films, but, you know, we'll see. World War II films sometimes hit big at the box office and sometimes they don't. Like I said, American audiences aren't as well versed on Dunkirk. So we'll see if that has an impact on the box office here. I don't know, but everybody's looking forward to the photography in this film.
And it's a story about early World War II. The English were being pushed out of France. Right. They were on the beach. It was a disaster.
300,000 soldiers stuck on the beach with no way out.
And they were rescued by an incredible effort by virtually everybody with a boat in England.
Exactly. Yep. The Nazis were getting ready to kill them all.
Let's move on to the next one that opens on July 21st, and that has an interesting title, Tony, Valerian and the City of 1,000 Planets.
Yeah, this is Luc Besson, who you might know from Fifth Element as well as his other action films and stuff he's done. He's like the French Steven Spielberg.
The professional.
Basically. Yeah, the professional. And it's been said that this is his most ambitious film that he's ever done. It's a science fiction film. It's set in the future where it's kind of like the International Space Station, the way this started off. They said it was between when the American space capsule and the Soyuz linked up together. And the idea was that all these other groups start linking together and they create this huge city.
Huh.
And that's kind of the premise of it, that all these other extraterrestrials and stuff are joining in. So you have all these mixes of races and beings.
It sounds like a prolonged bar in Star Wars.
Yeah, kind of. You know, with Luc Besson, the nice thing is he brings a different sensibility to design and storytelling that we don't get in a lot of these American films, but on a large scale. So the action science fiction elements should be approachable to people, but it may be a different kind of film for them.
I have been seeing a lot of teasing for the movie that's going to open July 28th, Atomic Blonde. Brittany, tell me about this one.
Yeah, well, I think the Atomic Blonde they're thinking of is Charlize Theron. And James McAvoy is also in it. And it's a Cold War action spy thriller. I'd like to see Charlize Theron do that.
Mm-hmm. The trailer looks really good. I have hopes for this one.
And also July 28th, here's another sequel. And this is an inconvenient sequel, Truth to Power.
Starring Al Gore. I actually think this will be the highest grossing documentary of the year. You have a built-in audience that's concerned about climate change. Gore actually, whether whether one's politics are left or right, actually comes off fairly good in these films in terms of a relaxed manner that he didn't display as a candidate in 2000. So again, if people believe in climate change, they'll probably go. If they don't, they probably won't go. But I do think it has a built-in audience and will do very well at the box office.
Oh, we have a little time here to push into August. And the movie that opens August 4th that's been I've been hearing a bit about is Detroit, Matt.
Yeah, Catherine Bigelow is the director. She did The Hurt Locker. She did Zero Dark Thirty. She's on a roll right now. She's the still the only woman to win the directing Oscar. And this is about the 1967 riots in Detroit. So it promises to have all those elements that she's good at, directing action scenes, a true story like she did with Zero Dark Thirty. So I am looking forward to this one. This is, you know, critically, this could be a good one.
Brittany, you had mentioned Patty Cakes, which also opens in August.
Yeah, it's centered on an aspiring rapper, and she's a white rapper, and she's known as Patty Cakes. And she is trying to get glory in her downtrodden hometown in New Jersey. And I've been following this actress, Danielle McDonald, ever since she did Every Secret Thing, and she was also in The East. I think it looks good. It's getting a lot of critical acclaim.
Okay. And Tony, Wind River, what's that about?
Well, it's a thriller about a U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service agent. Or agents, which doesn't
really?
Sound like a thriller.
Sounds exciting.
But they're investigating a homicide on a Wyoming Indian reservation. It stars Jeremy Renner and Elizabeth Olsen. And it's directed by Taylor Sheridan, who is a writer of Sicario and Hell or High Water.
Yeah.
So it's got some pedigree to it, and it's supposed to be a pretty decent thriller. I haven't seen much else on it. But Renner and Elizabeth Olsen make for a good couple on screen. I can see them in that role. And just the story about something taking place on an Indian reservation and their U.S. Fish and Wildlife, you can see the issues they're going to have with territorialism and with their, you know, federal agents versus an Indian reservation kind of things.
Oh, well, it's reminiscent of some events that we have experienced recently.
Looking forward to that one, actually.
Matt and Tony and Brittany, this is the summer movie season. Sure. So does this make or break the schedule for these, you know, these motion picture providers?
It can really affect if they're a studio that's struggling, like, you know, MGM doesn't even really exist anymore. But if they don't have a hit, they can really hurt them. And some of these films cost hundreds of millions of dollars, so it can be a huge dent.
And we've got that disruption going out there with Netflix and other providers.
And look at King Arthur, Doug. $180 million it cost to make that film. It made about $17 million opening. The reviews are terrible. They were setting up a sequel. If you've seen the film, they're clearly setting up a sequel. As he builds the round table at the end, there's not going to be a sequel. So that is a disaster. The Mummy, I still am not sold that The Mummy is going to be a big hit. But as Tony said, it'll be a big hit in China because Tom Cruise is in it. But it's a big summer, and maybe Guardians will be the top film of the summer. Spider-Man Homecoming, though, I think is going to be big.
All right. Well, we've been to the movies, and it's our job now to keep going, I guess, because it's going to be a busy summer. Matt Olien, a regular here on Main Street, reviewing movies every Friday. And we also have Tony Tilton and Brittany Goodman. Always a pleasure to have you in. Coming up next, we've got our discussion with Dave Thompson about the headlines.
Arts programming on Prairie Public is supported in part by the North Dakota Council on the Arts, a state agency developing, promoting, and supporting the arts in North Dakota.
What a week in the news. A special counsel, special testimony, political turmoil, and President Trump's first trip abroad. We'll have all that news, and you hear the name B.J. Lederman show after show. The most prolific composer of public radio themes has his solo debut and tells his story. Saturday on Weekend Edition from NPR News.
That's tomorrow morning right here on Prairie Public.
Well, there it is from out of the past, that wire machine that Dave Thompson and I remember so well. But it's the 21st century, and there's still actual news happening every day, Dave.
Absolutely, there is.
And you had a story that you just filed today. The mayor of Bismarck was facing a recall petition, but perhaps not an election.
Yeah, petition signatures were handed in, and they had more than enough. But city administration took a look and said there's some things that don't look right on it, so they had BCI, the Bureau of Criminal Investigation, take a look. And a number of signatures were thrown out because they were A, illegible, B, they were not residents of Bismarck, see one of the persons who was circulating a petition was not a resident of Bismarck. So all those petition signatures were denied, and that brought that under the cap. So they decided, well, there will not be a recall election.
And Mike Seminari is serving until next year?
Right. He is serving until next year, and he's being kind of coy about whether or not he's going to run for re-election.
Now,
meanwhile, I know that there are some people around Bismarck who are looking at a potential challenge.
What were the issues behind the petition?
Basically, the problem was the tax increment financing and the Renaissance Zone funding that was given to something called Five South, a real project to boost the area across from the Civic Center, south of the railroad tracks. And Five South was going to be a housing and shopping complex along with a big new hotel. And there were some people who were just not happy about that, thinking that their property taxes would probably be going up as a result. So the petitions were circulated. As a matter of fact, when I say circulated, that was kind of it was a misnomer, because in order to sign the petitions, you had to go to a local gun shop and sign the petitions there.
Uh-oh. Well, I do know that these issues like the Renaissance zones and tax increment financing are somewhat controversial.
They have turned into sort of controversy.
Yeah, yes. It's been that way in Fargo, and it was in the legislature, I guess.
That's right. There were some lots of arguments and discussion. They did put some limits on TIF and Renaissance zones that you can't have both for the same project. But there were some other things that were tried that the legislature did not have the stomach to do.
I was intrigued to see this headline because as long as this has been going on, I haven't heard it referred to as a crisis, but it really is. The Farmers Union is confronting the ag crisis.
Right. Now we're talking about that prices are down, profits are down. Some farmers say it's going to be hard to make ends meet because of the down prices. And their lenders are starting to raise some questions about whether or not they can make a go of it. So, yeah, we're starting to see a situation similar to that of the farm crisis in the late 1980s. The only thing that's different now is that we've had good crop yields, and that's saved everybody. Remember, back in the late 1980s, there was widespread drought, too. And if we get a widespread drought, it just could add to some of the heartache.
Well, when Danielle Webster filed this story earlier this week, she indicated that net farm income has decreased by half in the past 4 years.
Absolutely. And that tells you something. You know, farmers were really having some very good years there as commodity prices were high, but input prices went up. So input prices meaning fertilizers and things like that and seed costs. Now when the prices went down in terms of what they were receiving at the market, the input costs started to go down, but not quite as fast as they had risen when the prices rose. So farmers were somewhat caught in a squeeze. And they want to bring awareness of this whole situation. And of course, on the eve of talking about a new farm bill with a safety net, there's some urgency to this.
Okay. Well, we have been talking during the legislative session about the serious cutting that had to be done because of the revenue shortfalls in North Dakota.
Mm-hmm.
Now there's a little bit of the opposite action here because colleges were cut deeply and now they're raising tuition.
Exactly. Well, they were allowed to raise tuition to a cap of 4% for in-state students. Out-of-state students, they didn't have the cap on it, but the colleges by and large have said, yeah, we'll keep them 4% raises. With a few exceptions, and those are for, you know, these professional schools like the UND Law School is going to go up. Part of the UND Medical School is going to go up, and the pharmacy department is going to go up at NDSU. And because there have been studies showing that in terms of the regional averages, NDSU and UND were charging perhaps below the regional averages for those two programs. So they said there's more room to allow them to go up, and the legislature actually said that the campus president should have some flexibility on these, you know, higher cost programs to say, well, maybe we can raise tuition a little bit.
Well, the money has to come from the state or from tuition or from fundraising.
Right.
And with the decrease in staffing in higher education in order to accommodate the budget cuts,
yep,
and the increase in tuition, that might be affecting recruiting.
That could very well be affecting recruiting. I think that's going to be an interesting story to follow up on as we get toward the fall semester. Well, I've been hearing a few rumblings about it, but nothing overtly yet, because our tuition rates at least at the research universities and the four-year schools, are still pretty good. The two-year schools are a different thing. The two-year schools are middle to a little bit higher than the average.
You had a story right at the front of this week, Dave, on Monday, titled or headlined, Holmberg, Property Tax Relief Remains a Top Priority for State Lawmakers. Now, when I read this story, the thing that really struck me was that not so long ago we were talking about simplifying the property tax.
Correct.
And this doesn't look like it's simplified.
In a way, it is simplified, but in a way, it isn't. The thing that this legislature did was to take over funding of county social service programs, which are actually state social service programs, but the counties have funded them through a mill levy. By taking over that, the legislature argues that that's going to be immediate property tax reform and relief. This 12% buy-down program that was funded through oil tax money was seen by a lot of legislators as kind of a placeholder until they got this accomplished. Now they've got this accomplished. And although the dollars don't quite match up to the 12%, they're saying look at the percentage on the overall budget. The percentage of money going to property tax relief, which includes that county social service plan and also funding for K-12 schools, amounts to about 30% of the budget now. So that has gone up. However, if you think that doesn't mean that your property tax is going up, well, you're unfortunately mistaken because your property taxes are probably going to go up as well.
Yeah, that was you cited in the story Senator Ray Holmberg of Grand Forks, the chair of the Senate Appropriations Committee, saying, get ready.
Yeah, everybody had to take a cut. That's the argument the legislators are making.
Okay. I didn't realize that we were looking at a new supply of natural gas for the Red River Valley.
Yes. Isn't this an interesting project because it was by Williston Basin Pipeline, that's a subsidiary of MDU, wants to bring natural gas to the valley. They want to connect the eastern terminus of WBI, which is around Mapleton, to Viking, which is in Minnesota, and their terminus is Felt in Minnesota. And they want to connect that because A, it'll provide redundancy in case there are outages of gas, but B, it will allow more Bakken gas to get to the valley and maybe open up some opportunities for communities and citizens who do not have natural gas service.
Yeah, in your story, you mentioned that non-served communities might be at a disadvantage because they can't offer natural gas.
Right. Now, you know, a lot of these have propane, but if you want to bring heavy business in, you know, manufacturing does not like propane, and they would rather have natural gas. At least that's the argument that's made by economic developers who have said, we can't get a business to come to our town because we don't have natural gas service. And as a little corollary to that, Williston Basin is already, and this is already going through the Public Service Commission, Williston Basin has said that they were going to find a way to serve Gwinner, as we know that's the home of the Bobcat.
Yeah.
So if you get natural gas service to Gwinner, it appears Doosan Bobcat is going to expand the plant there. At least that's the talk. I think this is going to be interesting to watch how this rolls out over several months.
Okay. And finally, Todd McDonald on Monday reported that Glen Ullin had a boil order in effect for the city water supply because some critter got into the water.
It was a mouse. A mouse got into the water. And they determined to be on the safe side to just basically drain the tank and make sure everything was sanitized. So for a while, Glen Ullin residents had to boil their water. And if they wanted to drink water, they were urged to use bottled water. The Red Cross came in with cases upon cases of bottled water. Local convenience stores had sold out of bottled water. But now, probably by the close of business today, everything should be back to normal.
It's just wonderful to turn that tap on and fill a glass up, isn't
Absolutely it?
Absolutely
it is.
Okay. We check in with our news director every Friday. Dave, thanks for being with us again.
You are very welcome.
Dakota Datebook is next.
The Dakota Resource Council is hosting a screening of the Inside Energy documentary Beyond Standing Rock at the Heritage Center in Bismarck, Sunday, May 21st at 2 p.m. Following the film, there will be a panel discussion with Standing Rock Tribal Councilman Chad Harrison, Prairie Public's very own Inside Energy reporter, Amy Sisk, and Dakota Resource Council organizer, Nicole Donaghy. Information at drcinfo.org.
This is Dakota Datebook for May 19th. In the modern era, we're all aware of the value of exercise in promoting health, and that a sedentary lifestyle is not good for the body. Over 90 years ago, J.H. Shepherd of the Agricultural College in Fargo believed that exercise was the best medicine in dealing with youth. He stated that it's important that all the little chaps have a great abundance of wholesome exercise. However, the youth that he referred to were not children. The youth that Mr. Shepherd was referring to were pigs, and the exercise being touted as a way to reduce the toll created by thumps, a lung disorder similar to pneumonia or nutritional anemia. But he cautioned, it is best that it be introduced to the piglets in a manner that the little pigs think they are playing instead of being made to exercise. Among the playthings that were recommended were newspapers. It didn't make any difference if they were weekly, daily, or monthly. They could be in English or German or any other language as long as they were clean and dry. He believed that newspapers were clean things that could provide hours of entertainment for a pig. If the newspapers were not allowed to become dampened, the pigs would run and play with the papers, tearing them into tiny shreds until there's scarcely a scrap left. They should not be thrown on damp straw or dirty bedding, causing the paper to become soggy. If newspapers could not be procured, he recommended torn strips of burlap gunny sacks, as those too could keep the pigs busy and give them the exercise they need. Of course, once the little piggies are no longer little, they need to go to market. On this date in 1917, with the increasing popularity of the automobile, the Bismarck Tribune found it noteworthy that the old modes of travel no longer sufficed for King Pig. A.H. Klipstein of Minokin, a successful farmer, brought his three lusty porkers to market in an automobile trailer with pneumatic tires. So perhaps it would be desirable to modernize the old nursery rhyme to reflect the changing times. This little piggy went to market, well exercised on pneumatic tires, although that doesn't quite have the same ring to it. Today's Dakota Datebook is written by Jim Davis. I'm Meryl Pepcorn.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from the North Dakota Humanities Council.
President Trump told the graduates at the Coast Guard Academy that, quote, no politician in history has been treated worse or more unfairly, unquote. Well, not yet, Mr. President, but tune in this weekend. We'll see what we can do. I'm Peter Sagal. This week, we talked to Senator Ben Sasse about how many ways there are to say, I'm very concerned. Join us for the news quiz from NPR.
Saturday at 10 Central, 9 Mountain, right here on Prairie Public.
Monday on Main Street, we'll feature Sammy Jones, author of Derby Girls, a memoir. She'll be in a conversation with Prairie Public's John Harris. And we'll hear from Colt Romberger, who's riding on horseback from coast to coast to bring attention to the plight of Vietnam War veterans like his father, affected by Agent Orange. We hope you can join us for Main Street on Monday, and we hope you'll take in Main Street Weekend, Sunday morning at 10 Central. In the meantime, enjoy the rest of your day.